We're joined by Tony Leah. He is an expert on labor matters, but particularly auto workers. And of course, is a member of the of Unifor, and he's from the GM plant in Oshawa, which is a legendary spot. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Phil. Glad to be here.
Well, there's a couple of matters. Now it's very interesting. We can't talk about the really exciting development with the UAW without inevitably talking also about your union, Unifor. I guess I'd like to start out with the Toronto Star had an article by Martin Reg Korn. Oh, it's Korn, pardon me. My apologies. He's a member of your union, by the way, so I should be careful. And it's a Toronto Star. It was last Tuesday, October the 2nd. He was granted an interview by the leader of Manus Payne of Unifor. And he was, like a lot of labor journalists, trying to catch up to all the new developments with labor in North America, which now it's become agreed that labor is much more active. Workers are much more restless and insisting on that they want to get back what has been taken away from them. They also, they're noting the profits of the companies. But he acts as kind of a break on this in that he, in talking about Lana Payne's challenges with her own members, but he says there's problems with Unifor. One, they had a contract, you've talked about it, that got turned down, and they had to go and start again. So I'll start with that one. He said that their own bargaining committee knew it was the best or the best they could do. And he seemed a bit nonplussed and is that the members would turn it down. And he seemed to be suggesting that the members didn't understand that they're not in the trenches of bargaining. So he had seemed to attribute it to naivety. You want to comment on that? You were watching that closely. The Metro was a Metro workers.
Yeah, the workers at 27 Metro grocery stores in the Greater Toronto area. I think that's a very insulting viewpoint of what went on. The workers themselves knew exactly what the issues were. They knew what they were experiencing as workers, the difficulties they were going through, and the tentative agreement that was presented to them did not meet their expectations or their desires at all. And I haven't seen anybody talk about how convincingly that contract offer was turned down. 72% of the workers voted against it. It was massive. And that's despite the fact that every member of the bargaining committee and leadership of Unifor was telling them how great it was. And they were trumpeting that in the media. And clearly they were out of touch with the members. That's not the members' fault. That's the fault of the leaders. Mm-hmm. And the workers went on strike. They were exercising their collective power to hurt their employer, which is what workers need to do if they want to make progress. And I know that the workers were in many ways in enjoying the experience of exercising that power by being on strike. Not that any worker wants to be on strike, but they did get a lot out of that. And eventually they were presented with another offer in which Unifor leadership again told them how great it was. But in terms of the wage increase per year, it was exactly the same. The only difference is that instead of a four-year contract, they were presented with a five-year contract so that the overall wage increase looked a little bit higher. And even that agreement was not strongly supported by the members. I think, about 65% voted in favor of it. It was not a glowing recommendation. One of the problems that grocery workers face is that the vast majority of them are part-time, and they work very few hours. And the collective agreement that Unifor has with that group of Metro stores allows management to use up to 80% part-time.
80%?
Up to 80%, Monday to Friday. And they can use more on the weekends and if there are special circumstances. But 80%. So the full-time people are only about 20% of the workforce, and the wage increase that was negotiated was higher for the full-time minority than it was for the part-time minority, which is quite galling. The gap was not closed, it was increased. And that section of the contract, which allows management to have up to 80% part-time, wasn't changed. If Unifor had forced the companies to have a higher percentage of full-time, you could see that as being a step forward, but they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. They have this ability to dominate the media coverage and get away with saying what a great job they've done. And I don't think that can be justified by looking at the facts.
Yeah. The other element that got talked about in this article, he was commiserating with the labor writer or the columnist for the Star was commiserating with Lana Payne, in that he said that one of the obstacles she seemed to have was with people with disinformation. That with the internet now, I think they were suggesting, and Twitter, et cetera, is that people are communicating with each other and they're not getting the right information. and she agreed, saying, she used the word disinformation, but she said puts greater burden on the people, negotiating mm-hmm. or trying to get people to agree. So, what do you make of that? Is there a problem that members are talking to each other too much? By the way, they used to do that at meetings. I don't know if she knew, but they used to talk to each other without talking to the leadership. And they used to talk about the leadership with each other. I don't know if she's aware.
I'm not sure how much experience Lana has with particularly the auto section of the union and the many years that workers have gone through where they have fought very hard, and there's been a lot of a culture of holding the leadership to account and questioning. I'm not sure that it's to the degree that it used to be, but I think that one thing that is true is that social media and the internet have allowed better communication between different locations, between workers in different locations. And there's a lot more attention to what's going on with the UAW in the United States, which is really tearing things up in putting forward aggressive and ambitious demands, and not accepting what the corporations are offering, and playing the corporations actually off against each other so that they're getting a kind of a bidding war going, where one company will offer something and the UAW will say that's a step in the right direction, but it's not enough. And then the next company offers a little bit more. And they've really been able to dominate the setting the what the issues are, taking that away from the corporations, and as a result they've been garnering tremendous public support, and workers in Canada are watching that daily. They're watching the live streaming of Sean Fain, which he, does several times a week, talking about what
workers
the issues
here
are.
In Canada watching.
The Canadian workers are watching that, because it's all over the place. And so, yes, that is a challenge for the leadership of Unifor, because they're not following that same approach. They're following the old approach of keeping the members in the dark. And members notice that, one of the things that Unifor said when they settled the contract with Ford is expectations met and pattern set. And I've heard people say, well, how do we know the expectations were met? Because you never told us what the expectations were. Unifor never said, these are our bargaining demands. UAW did that very clearly and very loudly. So people are noticing that. And as a result, the tentative agreement that was presented to Ford workers in Canada got a 54% vote in favor. And they called it an historic agreement. And the only thing that's historic about it, I would say, is how low the voting percentage was. They've never had a vote that low before in the history of auto bargaining in Canada. Yeah. So are you going to blame the members for that, or blame the fact that they're getting more information now than they used to? What about the fact that Unifor would not give the members the full collective agreement to look over for a few days before they voted on it? They gave it to them. They made it available to them at 6 a.m. on the Saturday where they were supposed to vote on it. And then they were allowed to vote. Then they had a meeting at 9 a.m. And then they were allowed to vote starting at 10 a.m. for 24 hours. So they didn't have time to look through it and, and figure out whether...
people have gone to court who've been locked into contracts and told the judges that I met the guy and he was talking very fast. They gave me 200 pages and I signed that. But now I realize, and the guy said, well, you signed it. But the judge says, wait a minute. Now, what were you trying to do? I mean, obviously, if you wanted an honest contract with the gentleman, why didn't you give him time to look at it? Why did you want him to sign that? And you can actually win in court. That kind of operation, it's not an open and shut that, oh, you signed it, you're done.
Yep. No, you're very right. And auto workers resent that. They have for a long time. They've fought for a long time to get more information available and more time to look it over. In the United States, the reformers there, 10 years ago or more, forced the union to provide every word of the change language that they could look at for a number of days before they voted. They achieved that even before they changed the leadership. But we have not achieved that in Canada. There was also a very strong pushback against the idea of not having in-person meetings to discuss the collective agreement, and a petition that was circulated that thousands of workers signed and was ignored by the leadership of Unifor. And I notice that's not mentioned in the article as one of the reasons why there might be dissatisfaction or a disconnect between the members and the leadership. And the other thing that people are probably not aware of is the absolutely unprecedented degree to which Unifor leadership has gone to try to sell that agreement now to the GM workers. Things that I've never seen before in my life. I worked at GM for 40 years as a member of the union, an active member of the union. I've never seen anything like what they're doing right now. They emailed today every GM worker with an eight-page color brochure about how great the Ford agreement was and how good it would be for GM workers if they got the same thing. And they don't even have a tentative agreement yet with GM. But they're doing everything they can to tell people how great the deal they negotiate with Ford is and how GM workers should support it. So I think they're concerned. And they should be concerned, I think, because there's some very negative parts of the agreement. And they're also themselves telling falsehoods or being misleading about what's in that agreement. You know, if it was so great, they wouldn't have to mislead about it. And, you know, they're fudging the numbers, they're misrepresenting the numbers. You know, I don't know if you want me to go through any examples because it gets a little bit abstruse, but they're just making false claims about how good the agreement is.
Yeah. By the way, this is Tony Lea, Unifor, Oshawa GM. And I don't think I've had asked you on air. I know you and I have spoken about this, that the skilled trades leader, part of the bargaining committee, I guess, and he's part of the executive of Unifor. He said he's very alarmed, according to the Globe and Mail, that the way things went down at Ford, and now on GM, he says nothing can happen without me. you can't no deal without me, I think he said roughly.
Yeah, we're talking about
why is he talking like that? Why is he upset?
We're talking about Dave Cassidy, who's the president of Local 444, which represents the Stellantis workers in Windsor, the largest Stellantis plant in Canada. And they're not bargaining with Stellantis yet. They're going to finish with GM first and then move to Stellantis. And
oh, he's Stellantis, I'm sorry.
He's Stellantis. And he's saying that the deal that was negotiated at Ford is not good enough. It's not good enough for his members. And by the way, he knows that because they had a membership meeting a week ago Sunday with standing room only, something like 600 or 700 members telling him that it wasn't good enough.
Standing room only.
Standing room only.
Hey, that's a real union meeting.
That was an actual union meeting with people in it, you know, not on Zoom. And they told him loud and clear that the agreement that was negotiated with Ford was not good enough for them. And so that's what he's reflecting, and good on him for, you know, voicing the concerns of his members that he's elected to represent.
Can he back that up?
Well, I think that we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But if they don't make any changes to the pattern agreement, and if his members don't like it, the final word is in their hands. Because they get to vote on it, and they can vote it down, that should be very interesting. One of the things that, and as I'm a retired member, you know, I am very concerned about what was negotiated for the retirees, because the Unifor leadership and Lana has been telling us for months that they are going to do something for the retirees, that they understand our issues. Retirees in the auto industry in Canada have had no increases in their pension since December of 2007. So in 16 years, while inflation has gone up 42%, the retirees have had no increases. So they've lost 42% of their income, their purchasing power, what they can do with their pensions. It's a huge problem. And
when I read this interview with Reg Cohn, you'd think that you guys really made out like bandits.
That's one of my, you know, absolutely. and it's deception.
He doesn't work at GM. Go ahead.
Well, of course, he accepted what Lana told him. There's no investigation on his part because it's deception. What Unifor negotiated was an increase in pensions for people who retire in the future. In the future, the people who still have a defined benefit pension, which is only a fraction of the workforce, because everybody hired since 2016 only has a defined contribution pension. They don't have a defined benefit pension. They don't have a negotiated monthly pension amount. But for those people who are left that have that, will get that when they retire. They negotiated a 7% increase over 3 years. So now remember, we've lost 42% of the value. They're going to get back 7% of that, but over 3 years, which is less than 2.5% a year. So to say that it's a major increase, I think is kind of overselling it. But it doesn't apply to the tens of thousands of retirees from Ford and GM and Stellantis who have already retired. For those people, what they negotiated was a lump sum amount, depending on when you retired, of between $500 and $800 a year.
A year?
A year.
You can buy a lot of postage stamps with that.
Well, somebody did a little bit of math, and for the group that's been retired the longest before 2008, they get the $800. That's $2.19 a day. That's what they get. About $2 a day for the next 3 years, and then it's gone. And in the meantime, their monthly pension has not increased.
By the way, when all the leaders talk to all the members, and they don't discuss that at all, do they?
No, it's not getting discussed enough. And, you know, I think that some journalists have covered some of these issues, but a lot of them just accept what the union leadership has said.
You take the hand out. On a big subject, you mentioned it already, but I'd like to ask it as it applies to UAW. The complaint was you did all this hurry, but also by Zoom. Now, what's going on with UAW? How will they, what will be the process? Do you know?
You know what? I have not seen any specifics, but the way that they've been proceeding so far has been to share information with the members. They have revealed, first, they started off by setting out what their demands were in a way that the members could see them and understand them and rally around them. And then every offer they got from the corporations, they've shared that with the members. So I'm pretty confident that when it comes down to finally getting a tentative agreement, that they will share all that information and that they will have.
It won't be a 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
No, I'm sure that it won't. And Sean Fain has said, you know, that members are going to have a full opportunity to consider what's been negotiated and to understand it before they vote on it.
Well, let us hope so, but also let us watch very, very closely. The fact is, it's an exciting development. Everybody agrees that the UAW is doing things that have not been seen for more than, half a century. And real labor leadership. Tony Leah, thank you very, very much. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report, and we'll see you next week.